Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Daniel Mangana and David Strickel. This is your daily dose of happy. We're so happy you decided to join us today. And of course, those of you who are tuning in for the first time to watch us on local cable access, you may have seen Daniel before because we've done some shows with him. David may be new to you. Actually, on the local cable access, he is new. To our regular podcast listeners, he's not new at all. But David brings a different angle to the whole topic of the law of attraction in that he is able to channel, that's right, to channel information from what we call source energy, what most people would call the non-physical or spirituality or the other side or however you want to frame it. Now, I want to emphasize that this may sound a little bit strange to some people. It may sound a little bit uncomfortable to talk about something like that. And this is a point we touched on yesterday when Louis D'Souza and I were talking about Abraham Hicks. It's the same kind of idea. Once again, if the idea of channeling is a little bit uncomfortable for you, you know, put that bit aside, because what's really interesting is the information that comes out of David's mouth when he's connected in this way. But we'll try to take it one step at a time and keep it really human and really simple and really easy. So, David, good to see you once again. How are you doing? How's everything down in sunny Southern California?
It's sunny and beautiful in Southern California, and finally not as hot as it's been for the last several months. It's finally under 100 degrees every day.
We were talking about that before the show, how it had gotten down to the 80s and it seemed cold, which, of course, to us in New England sounds laughable, but it's totally understandable when the temperature changes that much.
When it gets into the 80s here, and even my dog this morning, I have a poor dog named Lola, and she was shivering. It was lower than this was first thing this morning. It was probably 68, 69 degrees, and she was shivering at the door to be let in right as soon as she went outside. So it was
When your body is acclimated to the warmer temperature, that's what's going to happen. That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
But tell people who are listening in more about what it is that you do as somebody who channels. What is channeling? What does that mean exactly? Because it sounds a little bit weird. It sounds a little bit spooky, almost like it's devil work or something like that. So let's take some of the sting out of this.
Sure. Everyone has different belief systems around what is beyond physical. And there are people who believe in deities. There are people who believe in source and in more what you would call spirituality. And there are people that believe there's nothing beyond physical. The best way I can describe what's beyond physical, the way I comprehend it and perceive it, is that beyond physical is consciousness. It's intelligence. And everything that humanity has created around that intelligence helps us better understand what that intelligence is and what that intelligence is offering to us. But most of the things that we encounter are human creation, are the humanization of the energetic realm. One thing that the intelligence that I share does say is that we get very caught up in right and wrong. Mm. Right, up and down, right and wrong. We're in a polarized environment, obviously, on every topic. But there's no wrong in any of that. There's no wrong in a created deity around that consciousness. It really is just whatever somebody has named it and labeled it, and then that idea has taken off in different sects of humanity, and we've built a set of beliefs around it. So I'm not here to say that there's anything right or wrong about anyone's religion or beliefs or lack thereof. We're all here on our own independent journeys. We all have some sort of a version of this coming to us because it's the thing that powers us. And we all have I do see that we all have some sort of a connection that we believe is beyond just our physical being. And maybe that's just our ego hoping that it's so. And none of us really, 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 really know that, right? But I know that when I channel, when I allow these thoughts to flow through me in a way that's a lot like this communication right now, there are things that come through me that are well beyond my intellect. I can comprehend them or I can't share them, but they're certainly not coming from me. And I know that, and people that really get into the teachings become aware of that very quickly. They see the contrast between me and that which I channel. The important thing is that the information that they share and the guidance that they share, I refer to it as a they, helps people change their lives, helps people improve their lives. And that is proven. That works. We have testimonial after testimonial after testimonial of people who have transformed their lives, everything from miraculous healing from terminal illness to getting out of abusive relationships to manifesting money in businesses. Somebody just posted in my group right before I came on. She was a graduate of my boot camp program, and she just manifested her dream job that she thought she was going to be unemployed because of COVID long term. And she's, you know, just saying that she's now got this dream job that she's attributing to her work in the TAIA program. So I have always had this thing about me that is a little different than most people seem to have. And it's what, when I was a little kid, I in the early years, of course, I thought everybody had this knowledge that would sort of drop into their mind that would sometimes contradict what their teachers and Sunday school teachers and parents were telling them. And over time, I referred to it as like my knowing. And I learned to trust my knowing more than my teachers and my Sunday school teacher and my parents, which ended up being a good thing because my parents were very detached from my childhood. My father left when I was six. My mother sort of resigned her parenting at that point and retreated to her bedroom for the rest of her life. And I was really left to raise myself.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, and that ended up being a really good thing because I had to depend on my knowing to get through life. And I didn't go through childhood the way you're supposed to go through childhood. I was a terrible student. I was dyslexic. I didn't do well in school. I got kicked out of Sunday school because I questioned too much. I did. I was asked not to return to Sunday school.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. And so I really was left to my own devices. And because of that, I retreated to my knowing. And I remember being very, very young, experiencing somebody coming to my parents' house in this car. And those people that are older might remember when a Lincoln was a luxury car.
Yes. You're dating yourself there.
Like considered pinnacle luxury cars. So she drove up in this, and I'll never forget it. I can visualize it to this day. It was given the timeline, it was probably a Lincoln Mark III, Mark IV, early 70s. And I remember her driving up. It was all silver, and it had all these buttons inside, all these shiny buttons everywhere, and it had a sunroof. I'd never seen that in a car before. We were very lower middle class. My father was a assistant coach at a junior high, and my mother wasn't working. And I think she became a secretary at some point shortly after that. So we were on the lower scale financially. And this woman comes up in this car, and I remember being so impressed by it. And I've been a car fanatic ever since then, actually. And she drove away. And as she drove away, my parents started really kind of bad-mouthing her. Sort of a, what did she do to get that? And she doesn't deserve that. And we'll never have that. And you'll never have that. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, that's not true. I don't think that at all.
Ooh.
And I can have anything that I want. I remember thinking that. My father left when I was six. And this was prior to that. So I was four or five, maybe six years old when this happened. And I do recall that very vividly. And then the next thing that I really remember was ahead of that, when I was 14, telling my older brother, Doug, that I know that everyone around us has money and we don't, because my parents divorced. My mother was minimum wage. We lived in a roach infested two bedroom apartment. We did not have anything. You know, we rationed food in our household. And my father married someone with money. So my half sister and my father and my stepmother lived in this beautiful house with marble floors, a spiral staircase and a pool. And they had everything. My sister had her own master suite.
Wow.
That she, you know, my brother and I shared twin beds in this tiny little bedroom, go to their house. My sister had her own master suite upstairs and they had another master suite downstairs and she had her own kitchen upstairs even. That's how lavish her life was. My father didn't really see us as the same. We were the stepchildren in his life and she was his child. So we had to reconcile that because our cousins lived that way too. Everyone around us lived upper middle class lifestyles. Their parents owned businesses, big houses, big cars, all that. And we didn't. So it really made it difficult. So I remember telling my brother when I was 14 that we can have all that stuff now. We don't have to wait. We don't have to go through college and find careers and do all these things. We can have all the things that we want right now if we just believe that they're already ours. I don't know what that was. I never heard of the law of attraction. I just knew that. And he thought I was nuts. And he went on to do the things that you're supposed to do in life. And he's doing just fine now. But I started manifesting things in high school. I drove a brand new Ford Thunderbird in high school with everything. I had sunroof, all the buttons, you know, just like the Lincoln had. I wore Ralph Lauren, which back in the late 80s, you know, it was kind of preppy.
That was the designer. Yeah.
Polo was the thing to wear back then. And, you know, I had a nice watch. I ran around with the richest kids in town. I always seemed to have the money to do the things that they were doing. And everyone thought I was one of the rich kids at town, but I wasn't. I went home every night to the 2-bedroom roach infested apartment with my brand new car sitting out front.
So, what an image.
Yeah, it was really, really an interesting way to live. And I wasn't a good student. And by the time my class was graduating, I didn't have the credits to graduate. I had made it all to the 10th grade level. I really partied a lot in high school. I'd go to happy hour every day, cut in class, and I was more or less an alcoholic in high school.
Wow.
And I had a lot of fun, but I didn't do well in school at all. So I didn't graduate on time. I went and got my GED. I was working a job at this point. I met a real estate agent, and she and I started talking about developing townhouses in this little town of 15,000 people in North Louisiana. And I said, I'm going to do that. So I became a real estate developer with no money at 19, you know, 10th grade education. And I did. I went and approached a landowner, and the landowner, he had inherited this dairy farm from his father. He had been a professor at Oxford. His son, my age, was at Harvard. He had no interest really in being there, but it was a family business and they had all this land to do something with. So I went to him and said, hey, let's do a real estate development with all this property that you've got. And he was crazy enough to listen to an uneducated 19-year-old, even though his son was at Harvard. And there was something that he really liked about me. And so we gathered the bankers, attorneys, civil engineers, all of the components that we needed to build this real estate development. And I'll never forget, we went to before the city planning commission. Again, this is a tiny town where everybody knows everybody else, but they asked us questions for the zoning of all this dairy land, and he couldn't handle, he had been a professor at Oxford, and for whatever reason, he was too awkward to get up and speak. It was really odd because, you know, as a professor, obviously he's used to speaking.
Yeah,
I got up and just, I'm sorry?
He would have been speaking every day.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. He was fumbling, and I just took over and answered the question in a satisfactory way that got the zoning approval that we needed. And that was just one of my first recollections of, you know, what am I doing?
Why? Yeah.
But they did, and it worked. I didn't make millions of dollars off of that, but I learned about business. I learned a lot of things. We got a lot of it done, not all of it done. And that's kind of how my adult life started. And I manifested opportunities like that. I manifested money and a lot of material things in my life up until about age 40, 41, when I realized that, wait a minute, money and material things alone are not making me happy. Mm. So it took me 40 years to understand that I knew law of attraction so well. And from my poverty mindset childhood, I thought flow of money and material things was the answer to everything.
Sure.
I hadn't really explored what we call spirituality at all. I had considered myself an atheist in my 20s, but I always knew that this knowing was beyond me and there had to be something more out there than just we're born and we die and that's it. And there's nothing else to us. And there's just too many coincidences, the power of positive thinking, the power of love. I needed to explain all those things to myself. And so I did more or less go inward in my 30s, and I started seeing some psychics. I started doing some things that were sort of outside the norm, but I kept all that hidden because by that time I was working in a corporate job. I'd gotten promoted really fast. I was making a lot of money. And I was in a situation where I couldn't be outwardly spiritual and teach and do the things that I do now in that career field. So I was exploring what's out there, and I learned to go inward more than go outward with it. So I was told by a psychic that I was a channel. I thought that was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. I didn't want any part of channeling. I did a little bit of research. There was not even YouTube yet at this time. Somehow I did stumble upon a book, a Seth book, and there was a video that I saw somewhere about channeling that I dug up somehow. We had the internet. I don't think it was YouTube at that time though. And it was of, oh gosh, I forget her name that channeled Seth.
Jane Roberts.
Thank you, Jane Roberts. Jane Roberts channeling Seth, and it really freaked me out. It was this really forced, really, you know, I thought she was being possessed. And I thought, well, that's not what I'm getting. That's, you know, my knowing is not that. It's something different. And so it scared me so much that I turned myself off to it and didn't listen to it. Well, the psychic had told me to listen to Abraham. And I know you talk about Abraham a lot on here. Mm-hmm. And she pulls out this big plastic binder. And I remember it was purple. And the front of it said something like the teachings of Abraham. And it was actually a box set of cassette tapes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, this was like cassette tapes were already done at this point. So it was a little bit old.
Right.
But it said Abraham. And I remember looking at that thinking Bible. That sounds like the Old Testament of the Bible.
Yes.
I was part of that. I was raised in religion. I don't want any part of anything biblical. I've already read all that. I studied all that. I already got kicked out of Sunday school. You know, I'm done with all that stuff. So I didn't want anything to do with Abraham. Until years later, I was living in Seattle, Washington. I think I've told this story on here before, but I'll tell you again. I was living in Seattle, Washington. By this time, the book, The Secret, had come out.
Right.
So the idea of, I knew what part of my knowing was at that point, and we have a name for it. It's called Law of Attraction. I knew that I had intentionally manifested money and lots of material things in my life. I was living a very lavish lifestyle. I was earning a mid six figure income, living in a 4,200 square foot house, driving a Mercedes. We also had a Porsche, beautiful furnishings, custom made suits, Gucci loafers, all of it. All the stuff that you're supposed to have to be happy, right? So this is all happening around the same time where I'm really realizing that, wow, I'm not happy. This was also in the middle of the recession. Mm-hmm. And I'm teaching this stuff in my business, but I couldn't call it Law of Attraction because that would be likened to religion and that would get me in trouble with HR. But I did a lot of sales training and I wove positive thinking and Law of Attraction into my sales training. And I had some of the most successful salespeople in the history of the company that worked for me and ran through them some of the most successful areas. So I'm doing a training class in Seattle, Washington. I just moved there from Florida. I was driving this rear drive Mercedes. I bought a house on the top of a mountain, foolishly, not thinking about how the Mercedes is going to get up the hill. Didn't think about that.
Oops.
So, yeah, it was a big problem because I was about 300 pounds at this point, very overweight. And
wow.
Hiking my 300-pound body up that hill in the snow was not fun. So, by the house at the top of the hill, driving the Mercedes, I really wanted to manifest a black Range Rover. That was my dream machine at that point. I wanted this all-wheel drive Range Rover so I could just whisk up the hill. And it, specifically, I wanted a black one. I was really into black cars at that time. So I'm teaching my class one day in one of my locations. And after the class, this interior designer, that was my industry, she came up to me and she says, you're teaching Law of Attraction. You realize that, right? And I said, yeah, I know what I'm teaching, but I can't really call it that because I don't want to get in trouble. And she said, have you ever heard of Abraham? And I said, yes, I've heard of Abraham. I hearken back to that, you know, plastic biblical looking thing that was handed to me that I ignored. I said, yes, I've heard of Abraham. She says, you sound a lot like that. And I don't know where you're getting your stuff, but I think you really need to listen to this. So she comes out, and I'm not joking, she comes out from her desk this very day with the box set of CDs.
Well, at least you upgraded to CDs.
Right, I'm always like one technology behind with this stuff. This was during MP3 time, certainly, but she had, I still had a CD player back then. So she hands me these CDs, and she said, you need to go home and listen to this. And I said, oh, okay, fine. I was trying to be polite. I put them on my passenger seat, drive home that day, and I'll never forget, I'm sitting in the turning lane to turn left into my neighborhood, and I come up behind my dream machine, the black Range Rover. And the personalized plate on the Range Rover said, Abraham.
Oh, my. Wow.
Yeah. I took that as a very solid sign from the universe that
I need
to pay attention to Abraham. So I went home. The CDs turned out to be, they may have been the same thing as the cassettes were. They are the original Abraham teachings from 1988, a year after I graduated from high school. So I sat all night long, stayed up all night listening to one after the other after the other, didn't freak me out at all. Esther Hicks channels Abraham, as most people may or may not know, I don't know. And she channels Abraham in such a way that it's very comfortable and easy to listen to. It's not this, and I understand now why Jane Roberts channeled the way that she did, and I understand why Esther has developed a way of channeling where the Abraham message is shared very comfortably. And that inspired me eventually to channel my own version of that. So I got into the Abraham teachings. I started changing my life with those teachings. I started meditating. I had a Kundalini awakening, a That's a whole other show that we can talk about, where you meditate and you have this energy awaken within your body and your whole life changes forever after that. The only thing I can say about a Kundalini awakening is I didn't know what it was, nor was I looking for it when I had one.
Oh, that must be a little bit of a shock then.
Yes, it was a shock. I had no idea what that was, and I wasn't looking for it. I tell people today, don't go looking for that, because I wasn't looking for it. Yeah. I had it. My whole life changed after it. But you can change your life whether you have this miraculous awakening or not. It's not something that I think people should necessarily look for or try. I don't know how you would try to do that. So I did I started meditating. I very quickly had this Kundalini awakening. I really came to understand what my knowing was through the Abraham teachings. And then I got to the point where I had changed every other aspect of my life over about a 10-year period from 41 to my late 40s, really, maybe an 8-year period. I had gotten out of the bad relationship that I was in. I'd gotten out of the corporate job that I was in that even though I paid a lot of money, I didn't enjoy it anymore. I lost 100 pounds. I was having chronic back pain. I got rid of that without surgery, even though I was told I had to have surgery to alleviate the pain. I was on painkillers. In fact, I was addicted to Oxycontin. I got off of that. Wow. So I changed all of these things over this period with the combination of the Abraham teachings and my own knowing. Mm-hmm. And for me, there were some things that frustrated me with Abraham stuff for me. Mm-hmm. So I sort of laid off the Abraham teachings and went more inward to my own internal guidance, if you will. And through that internal guidance, I sort of connected the dots to change everything else. So it's sort of like that was the springboard for me to discover my own practice. And then ultimately I got to a point where I was so impressed with what I was able to do for myself. Just sharing it in a business setting wasn't enough anymore. I had to share it. I never in a million years thought I would be on a podcast channeling. I never in a million years thought I would write a book other than maybe a novel. I kind of dreamed about writing a novel at one point. I never thought I would be doing this. 5 years ago, if you asked me if I would be doing this, I would say, that's insane. I'm a corporate guy. I'm going to be a corporate guy. This is my life. I'm not one of those weird channeling people. I could care less. I could care less. If somebody's not into it, just like you said, if you're not into it, if it's not your thing, then it's not for you. Move on to something else. I don't need to prove it to anybody. Either you're into it or you're not. If you're into it, there are tools here for you that will help you change your life. If you're not into it, then you're not into it. It's fine.
Yeah.
So I started a podcast. I wrote a book, quit my job, ended up creating a coaching program. In the beginning, it was really to sell my book. You know, when you write a book, you start hearing from all these different sources of how you build your platform, get your book published, and how you ultimately make a living. And a lot of people, you know, sort of do the same things. But the interesting thing is that when I started doing my course and started teaching people these tools, I realized that I wasn't just teaching a course. I was teaching a way of life. And that's where the TYA, T-Y-A practice was born. And TYA stands for trust your abundance. And I realized that if you're new to law of attraction, or if you've been applying law of attraction intentionally, I hate to say using law of attraction because it's like saying using gravity. I'm going to use gravity today to stick to the craft.
You know? Oh, you've been addicted to gravity anyway.
Gravity big time. So what I understand about law of attraction is that it is the creator of everything in our lives, good and bad. And we're not going to use or not use the law of attraction as much as we can become more intentional in what we're attracting. And that's where your life starts to change. And that's the real value of it.
That's a great summary. Thank you for telling and sharing that story. In fact, you shared some things there I hadn't heard before. So that was really cool. I like that. Daniel, I want to go to you because you're the one who brought David to me. You brought some really cool guests onto the show. David's definitely one of the coolest ones.
I was just the conduit to your manifestation, Walt, and I merely get to witness and enjoy it. That's all. You're cool.
Well, you do get to witness and enjoy it. And I love that. That's fabulous. But I got to ask you, what was your first impression when you first ran into David, when you first interacted with him? What did you think about it?
I was really happy. So, I was never into the channeling stuff. Not really. A lot of my friends are into the Abraham. You guys like to talk about it. I'm a bit, great. Yeah, Rampage, yay. Because the honest thing, the honest truth of my experience, and again, this isn't a generalization, my honest experience is that I have a lot of happy people that aren't really happy that I see that are into, I am descended from the star seed of Jungle Watt in the Sirius star system or whatever. So I actually then got into the work of another channel that actually did knock me off my feet, which is interesting because some friends of mine have been talking about this chat for like a year. I was like, yeah, cool, whatever. Great, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, because you don't want to sort of poo on someone's something someone's up about. And then three people in one day from who are completely unrelated said, "You got to read this book." So I read the book, and I literally could feel the energy coming out of the pages of the book.
Wow.
So I said, "Oh, okay. I guess I called that one wrong, didn't I?"
Yeah.
And then we went to go and see him in person, and then went to one of his events.